In a wide-ranging speech before a crowd of several hundred people, Clinton touched on issues like health care, education, and prison reform. He sent a message that the Democratic fight between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton is not a war of ideals, but of pragmatism.
Both these candidates, they voted together 93% of the time. So why did the Congressional Black Caucus and the Human Rights Campaign and the League of Conservation Voters vote for her? Because they're all part of the political establishment? No.
They backed Hillary Clinton, the former president said, because she gets things done in Washington. Clinton won the 2008 Democratic primary in Rhode Island, but her opponent this year, Bernie Sanders, has inspired passionate support from some voters. John Bender, Rhode Island Public Radio.
My vote's up in the air. I think a lot of people's votes are up in the air. It's time for them to say specific things to bring us in.
What would it take to make up your mind? I mean, what are you waiting to hear?
Something very specific about how we're going to move the economy.
Senator Sanders, what should we look for on Tuesday? What are you hoping to accomplish here in Rhode Island?
Well, I'm hoping that we're going to have a large voter turnout. I'm hoping that we're going to see a lot of working people, middle-class people, young people coming out and say, you know what, given the crises facing this country in terms of income and wealth inequality, high rates of poverty, the crisis of climate change, that it is too late for establishment politics and economics. We need a political revolution where people come together to tell the billionaire class they just cannot have it all.
One of the raps on Bernie Sanders is that you're, quote unquote, like a Santa Claus guy, that you're promising things that the nation can't afford. What's your retort to that?
Oh, my goodness. How much time do we have on that one? It's an interesting question, Scott, because what is often not talked about is that over the last 30 years, there has been a massive transfer of wealth from the middle class to the top one-tenth of 1%, who have seen a doubling of the percentage of wealth they own in the last 20, 30 years. How come we don't talk about that? How come as a nation we can afford to have massive poverty in inner cities throughout this country and transfer trillions of dollars to the top one-tenth of 1%? Well, you know what? If we can afford to do that, I think we can afford to have health care for all of our people, like every other industrialized country, paid family and medical leave, rebuilding inner cities throughout this country, and providing a decent life for working families.
For many Rhode Island Republicans who don't like Trump, the only hope now is a contested convention. Saunderstown resident Ruth Zakaria was rooting for Marco Rubio, but now that Rubio is out of the race,
it's tough for me to decide. I like John Kasich the best because I think he has a lot of good experience in every way. But I'm not sure if I'm going to vote for him or Ted Cruz first.
Sitting in her living room, Zakaria says she appreciates the fact that Cruz stands up for what he believes. But he's a little more conservative than she is.
I would have liked him to be more, I guess the word is, a game player in the Senate. Now, he went in there not to be a game player. He went in there with the instruction from the Tea Party and the people that supported him to shake the place up.
And he did shake things up. Cruz led the effort to defund President Obama's health care law, leading to the government shutdown in 2013. Newport resident Michael Smith, on the other hand, will reluctantly vote for Cruz in the primary. Cruz is not his first choice, but the decision will be tougher for Smith in the general election if Trump is the nominee.
You know, if it was between Trump and Hillary Clinton and those were the only two choices, I would probably have to really hold my nose and vote for Trump, you know. But it would be extremely difficult to do that.
Smith is hopeful Trump won't get the nomination, and he's not alone.
I think we still have some pretty good conservatives left in the race, but I am personally disheartened to see that Trump is still the front runner.
Providence resident Luis Vargas is the community development director for the Rhode Island Republican Party. Vargas is voting for Cruz in the primary, but not because he's excited about Cruz as a candidate. It's more of a vote against Trump.
He's called, you know, immigrants rapists and things like that, largely painting with a broad brush, whole groups of people. He's talked about closing down mosques, you know, and I mean, the Republican Party is supposed to be the party, you know, that protects freedom, right, and protects freedom of religion.
But unlike Vargas and Michael Smith, many other Republicans in the state like Trump. The most recent poll shows Trump is leading in the state among likely Republican voters.
I'm Hanan Saeed. I'm a student at the Community College of Rhode Island. I get to interact with a lot of people, obviously many of them non-Muslim, and I have never felt discriminated against. In fact, even the student body president at the Community College of Rhode Island has spoken to me about a quiet self-reflection room that the Muslim students and other religious students could use.
We live in probably the best state in America. I and my family, we believe that Rhode Island is probably the best place to raise kids, the best state in America. But since this rise of Islamophobia, Muslims have been fearful of this retaliation and this reaction from the political class and from ordinary folks as well, because everyone is influenced by what they see on the screen. And every day when you are beating the drums against Muslims, that Muslims are responsible for these terrorist attacks or terrorism. And the reality is that there are more than 1.8 billion Muslims around the world. And if a tiny fraction of that is responsible, you cannot put the blame on all of the Muslims. And in America, American Muslim community has been actively involved with the law enforcement, helping law enforcement, cooperating with law enforcement, and their reflections are completely different than what the politicians are saying.
22-year-old Dorian Morales is waiting for his breakfast at La Casona, a Colombian restaurant in Central Falls. As a recent college student and young working professional, Morales has a lot of student loans to pay off. He's following the primary election with enthusiasm.
My obvious like choice for candidate, I guess, would be Bernie Sanders. He stands for a lot of the things that I've always thought about. I guess I've always waited kind of for like a candidate like him, somebody who is interested in the inequality gap.
This year across the country, millennials make up nearly half of eligible Latino voters. And like Morales, many of them applaud Bernie Sanders' commitment to free public college tuition. Morales doesn't hear any of the Republican presidential candidates addressing issues that matter most to him.
The Republicans this year, they're off the wall. I'm not sure I don't know if that's Donald Trump setting the standard or something and Ted Cruz trying to keep up, but I just don't understand it, honestly.
And neither does Cristian Tavares. Tavares and his brothers own this restaurant. He says he's grateful the local community has embraced La Casona, helping it grow. Tavares says he's examining the candidates from the perspective of a small business owner.
¿Quién le brindará uno las mejores oportunidades para seguir creciendo? Porque esa es la idea, no quedarse uno en un punto y no seguir.
I'm looking for someone who's going to give us an opportunity to keep growing, because that's the idea, right? Not to get stuck, but to keep growing and employ more people. In this community here, people are living off minimum wage and working really hard to keep moving forward.
Trabajar es por salir adelante.
Tavares hasn't decided if he'll vote for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. In downtown Providence, Jose Batista thinks both candidates have strong appeal.
But I think Bernie has probably broader ideas that penetrate the community a little bit more deeply. For example, minimum wage, $15 an hour, that's something that would affect a lot of Latinos. Medicare for all, that's something that would affect a lot of people in poverty, a lot of people that are Latinos. Tuition-free state colleges, which is tremendous, especially because in Rhode Island, the median age of Latinos is 26 or 27.
Just a few local elected officials are backing Donald Trump's presidential campaign in Rhode Island. State Senator Edward O'Neill is one of them. O'Neill is the only independent state senator. His support for Trump grew stronger after he and his wife went to a rally in South Carolina. There were 10,000 people there. Before the event, O'Neill thought the scene might be marked by pickup trucks outfitted with Confederate flags.
The people, though, were very, very much like you and me. Very polite, very well-dressed, well-groomed. I didn't see any Confederate flags. I didn't see any gun racks on pickup trucks.
O'Neill concedes Trump is bombastic, yet he likes Trump's business background and negotiating experience, and thinks if elected, he would surround himself with brilliant people. He sees Trump as the only candidate who will really go after challenging issues like immigration, national security, and the shrinking of the American middle class.
Trump's not perfect. He's got a lot of warts, and those warts concern me. But at the end of the day, you got to say, who's going to stand up and protect the borders? Who's going to stand up and try to get a fair deal for people who want a decent living and a decent job and a decent wage?
O'Neill says it's average middle-class voters who are quietly propelling Trump's popularity in Rhode Island. He sat down to breakfast recently with a few of those voters at Frank's Restaurant, a diner in Lincoln.
I know what I want. I want the, you know, the usual breakfast special, but no meat.
As O'Neill ordered breakfast, other Trump supporters talked about the campaign.
I'm concerned about the perception of him by the public.
That's Senator O'Neill's wife, Carol, a retired teacher.
They're doing their level best to smear him. And I'm worried that people, the media, and also the core Republican Party is trying to smear him. They're scared to death of this guy and what this might mean. He doesn't owe anybody anything. And they're not used to that.
At the Crown Plaza Hotel in Warwick, Republican Donald Trump told supporters he's a winner.
You may say, please, please, we can't take it anymore, Mr. President. Please, please don't win anymore, Mr. President. And you know what I'm going to say? I'm sorry. We're going to keep winning. We're going to make up for lost time.
Trump addressed a crowd of at least 1,000 fans fewer than 24 hours before polls opened in Rhode Island and four other states. Trump is expected to win big just about everywhere. In Rhode Island, a public policy polling survey released Monday shows him at 61% among likely Republican primary voters. Trump slammed rival candidates Ted Cruz and John Kasich for joining forces in an attempt to block him from securing the nomination.
Because it's a rigged system, because it's a corrupt enterprise, in politics, you're allowed to collude. So they colluded. And actually, I was happy because it shows how weak they are. It shows how pathetic they are.
Trump's closest rival in Rhode Island, Ohio Governor John Kasich, made a pitch to voters at Bryant University on Saturday. He got big cheers for criticizing the negative tone of the presidential contest, saying it makes people cynical about politics.
It is not our job in public life to demean and disgrace the business of public life because we get into personal attacks against anybody. Win with ideas or go home. Just that simple.
Kasich seemed relaxed in the town hall setting with nearly 800 people. He spoke for about an hour about his childhood in Pennsylvania, his concerns about the national debt, and his belief that government should ease regulation to help small businesses.
Worry about re-election. See, the fundamental problem we've had in America is our leadership has been very poor. It's been very poor.
Pressed about his standing in third place in the Republican race, Kasich presented himself as the only candidate with workable policies and a chance to beat Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton in a general election. Bryant student and Connecticut resident Raymond Anastasia went to the rally hoping to be convinced.
My vote's up in the air. I think a lot of people's votes are up in the air. It's time for them to say specific things about how we're going to move the economy.
The economy was a top issue for Democrat Bernie Sanders, who addressed a large crowd on Sunday at Providence's Roger Williams Park. Organizers estimate some 7,000 people turned out to see him.
Together, we are going to create an economy that works for all of us, not just a handful of campaign contributors.
Sanders stuck mostly to domestic issues, mentioning his Democratic rival Hillary Clinton by name just once in a comment about the environment.
Now, Secretary Clinton tells us that she's concerned about climate change. Madam Secretary, if you are concerned about climate change, join me and impose a tax on carbon.
At the rally, 22-year-old Shamar Talley of Cranston said he wasn't really into politics before Bernie Sanders.
He's a real person, you know what I mean? You want a relatable human in the White House, not someone who's been around wealth their whole life and really can't resonate with the rest of us.
For Stephanie Carter of Warwick, the event was a family affair.
I just love his economic message about equality. I just think there's so much unfairness with the top earners making so much and so much poverty.
Poverty and the economy were also at the top of Hillary Clinton's list when she rallied roughly 1,000 supporters at Central Falls High School on Saturday.
I love this little state. I have so many friends here. I know how resilient and hardworking the people in this state are.
Central Falls is home to a majority of Latino residents, a group Clinton is expected to need to win the state's primary. It's also one of the poorest communities in the state, and Clinton promised to improve the economy.
I want to get us back into the job creation business. I want us to make many more investments in infrastructure. Our roads, our bridges, our tunnels, our ports, our airports, our water systems.
Hi, how you doing today?
Fantastic.
Very good.
On a crisp Saturday morning, Lauren Nidell stands at the exit of the Chepachet Transfer Station in Gloucester, or more informally, the town dump. Most residents drive through here sooner or later, as Gloucester has no trash pickup. Nidell hands out political flyers to passing cars.
Hey, how you doing today, sir? Very
good.
I'm running for town council. I hope you consider my campaign and vote November 8th.
Town council?
Yes.
Sure.
This is Nidell's first bid for elected office, but not her first foray into politics. During the presidential primary, she served as the state contact for Bernie Sanders, helped organize the push to get him on the ballot, and was a delegate for Sanders at the Democratic National Convention. Nidell says she was drawn to Sanders' progressive brand of politics.
And his honesty, his integrity, the way he stands up for the 99%, and his willingness to fight the good fight without worrying about his political future.
But Sanders' political future did not include becoming the Democratic Party nominee this year, much to Nidell's disappointment. She says she now faces a tough choice.
It's a toss-up between writing in Bernie Sanders and voting for Hillary Clinton. It's close.
Most major polls show Clinton leading nationally, and Rhode Island hasn't voted Republican since Ronald Reagan. So Nidell feels free to vote her conscience.
And my allegiance has always been with Bernie Sanders.
Nidell's opposed to Trump, but she doesn't agree with some of Clinton's positions, including her approach to foreign policy.
She also has not come out against fracking, nor has she come out in support of the Native American indigenous people that are fighting on the North Dakota Access Pipeline.
Hillary Clinton has come out against some fracking, including projects opposed by state and local governments, but environmental issues are the key reason Nidell decided to run for Gloucester Town Council.
Presidential campaigns have never been mistaken for church services or campfire songs. The thrust and parry of negative politics has long brought out the worst in our country. Yet, through wars, depressions, and seismic shifts in the economy and makeup of our population, the resiliency of our system has won out. This time, that may not be the case. It seems too often as if voters live in two different worlds. Even the campaign slogans are divisive. Trump's Make America Great Again harkens to a bygone monochromatic country run by white men. It assumes that things in the U.S. are terrible. Hillary Clinton's Stronger Together looks forward to a changing country with a growing economy that celebrates diversity. The truth, as usual, falls somewhere in the hazy middle. The United States is not nearly as bad off as Trump claims, nor, for the many who have lost jobs to globalization, as well off as Clinton asserts. This way-too-long campaign has galvanized the notion of two countries that don't much understand or interact with each other. City dwellers versus their country cousins. Minorities against whites. Women and men on different planets. The internet, which was supposed to bring the world to our living rooms, too often leaves us in our own divided houses, red and blue voters cherry-picking what they want to believe. With any luck, we'll go to bed tomorrow night knowing who is the next president. But will the losing side accept the result? How will we overcome the caustic residue of a fact-free campaign? Already, some Republicans are saying that they won't accept a Clinton victory. And Democrats so loathe Trump that they'll likely try to block his policies and especially his Supreme Court nominations.
My wife, Dawn Casey Rowe, is voting for, unfortunately, Hillary Clinton.
My husband, I believe it's a private matter inside the voting booth, but will be voting for Mr. Trump.
Before this particular election, both Dawn and I were more aligned because I don't think we had such drastic differences in the candidacy. I believe both candidates from the Democratic Party and from the Republican Party in the past were very middle ground. Dawn has always been more of an independent than I was. I guess as I'm getting older, I'm getting more conservative.
Well, I'd like to ask you, why are you voting for Mr. Trump in this election?
Because I believe that he has vision to bring some moral fiber back into our country and to stabilize our country voting for Supreme Court justices that will help our country in the next 40 to 50 years or so. Being a small business person, I do admire his success that he's had as a businessman. And I like the fact that he's an outsider from Washington. Dawn, why are you voting for Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think that's an interesting question you bring up about the Supreme Court justices. When you look at some of the freedoms that we have today, I wonder if a court of a different composition would keep those in place for me, certainly as a female, or for people in general. As well, I watch the cost of education skyrocket. And while I no longer believe that we always need to get that traditional path to education, I know that, my students need to be able to access that without crippling debt. I think one of the main concerns that I have is the issue of immigration. In education, I work with kids who came here at ages 2, 3, 4. But for the grace of God, you know, my family would have been facing this in a different generation. So I have to act with compassion based on the people I work with.
In many ways, this has been a difficult campaign for everyone, with perhaps more than its fair share of personal attacks and heated rhetoric. Parents and politicians alike have even lamented the idea that kids hear a lot of it. Democrat Hillary Clinton aired a campaign ad where children watch Republican Donald Trump on TV.
They'd be carried out on a stretcher, folks. And you can tell them to go themselves.
In Newport, civics teacher Lee Russell knows all too well just how much children are absorbing this election.
I have an 8-year-old, so she's in third grade. And she already has an idea about Donald Trump now. And I really don't know how it came into her mind. So I'm not sure if it's happening in the school or on the school bus.
But Russell says that's not all bad. For sixth graders in his classroom, the controversy and the outsized personalities this year have made it easier to engage in discussions of democracy and the founding of the nation, all part of the civics curriculum at Thompson Middle School. Walking down the hallway, Russell says it's almost like Donald Trump speaks the language of junior high.
Some of the funny names that are coming out of it. I think kids have latched on to lying Hillary and crooked Ted and low energy. I mean, those things are just put in such simple terms that kids get it.
But there are many issues in this election that are far from simple, like terrorism and job loss. Russell says he tries to push students to go beyond those headline-grabbing phrases and look at the candidate platforms. Do they discuss solutions that could work? Providence High School civics teacher Maya Chavez sees this election as an opportunity.
They asked me if I wanted to teach something besides civics this year, and I was like, no, it's an election year. Like, why would I want to teach anything else? It's perfect, you know, because kids are seeing stuff on Facebook, and they're coming in. They're like, well, my friend said this. Like, that's wrong, right, miss? And here's my evidence for it.
Chavez teaches ninth grade at Alvarez High School, where students look at the difference between the country's two dominant political parties.
What do they have to say about, you know, immigration reform? What do they have to say about the Syrian refugee crisis, about gun control, health care? They'll look at like a campaign video, identify what's the candidate's argument, what evidence are they using to support it, identify whether or not it's strong evidence or is it weak evidence, right? Is the candidate making a claim about climate change based on what the weather is outside or based on additional research, right?
One overwhelming feeling brought Chepachet voter Diana Seaver to the polls.
Stress. I can't wait for this to be over.
Many of us can relate to that feeling, and perhaps this one as well. Seaver is a Republican, but she says she voted for Hillary Clinton because Seaver has Obamacare insurance, and only Clinton pledged to save the health law. Donald Trump said he would repeal it. Seaver says she just felt too torn to vote with her party.
I'm a Republican, but I did vote for Hillary because I'm on Obamacare, and she's the only one who can fix it.
But Trump's message resonated with Gloucester voter Justin Pattison Schmidt, who says the Republican would help, quote, restore the country's prosperity. But it was more than the presidential choice that brought him to the polls. Pattison Schmidt wanted to make his voice heard on ballot question number 3, a bond to improve the state veterans' home.
The veterans' bond is very important. Like you know that our veterans, a lot of them are homeless. They come back and they really have no one looking out for them. And I think it's about time that we start helping our veterans.
Question three is one of seven items Rhode Islanders have been asked to accept or reject on this year's ballot. Another ballot question, whether to approve a new casino at Twin River, also drew strong opinions. Cranston voter Monica Suarez voted to reject it. She says gambling can destroy a community.
I would not vote for gambling. I grew up in New Jersey. I know what it does. I'm not voting for it here.
But Johnston voter Ron Bianchi says a casino could be good for the Ocean State.
It's going to bring revenue in, you know, jobs, you know, it'll help out. Anything to help the state, you know.
Voters from several different areas and backgrounds said even though Rhode Island isn't usually a swing state where every vote counts, their votes do matter. Newport voter Laura Slater put it this way.
Every vote counts. I was told when I was in school not to be apathetic. And it's important to vote. You have that one time that you can actually make something happen.
We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
There's obviously a lot to talk about, so we're going to get right to it. Donald Trump scored a stunning upset victory in Tuesday's presidential election. There are a lot of different reasons, but economic anxiety among white working class voters propelled the surprising outcome, and Trump got almost 40% of the vote here in Rhode Island, where our economy has been lackluster for many years. Scott, Trump supporters think he's going to be able to deliver on his promise to improve the economy and bring back manufacturing jobs. What do you say?
I think that's going to be very, very difficult. First of all, disentangling from trade deals is not going to be easy. Look what Britain's going through with Brexit after this vote. And as far as the immigration things, we have to look. Is he really going to deport his rich friends' nannies? I mean, a lot of this stuff plays well on the campaign circuit, all these slogans. But I'd have to see, and I think you make a very good point, Ian, in that if you look at the parts of Rhode Island that resemble places like Ohio and Michigan, where they have lost jobs and the blue-collar workers are still hurting, look at how well Trump did in Johnson, West Warwick. I'm looking at North Providence. All of these areas he did very, very well in, much better than most Republican candidates do in Rhode Island presidential elections.
Yeah, and this seems to be an issue the U.S. will be wrestling with for many years to come, because we hear Governor Raimondo talking about trying to create the new manufacturing jobs, the high-tech manufacturing jobs of the future. We're in a period of slower economic growth in America, and it seems as if voters are going to take their scorn out on politicians, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, who do not show an ability to improve the economy. So let's get Maureen in here. Maureen, what do you say on Trump's ability to deliver some economic improvement?
Well, I think the first thing we have to say is that, to sort of quote Willie Loman from Death of a Salesman, attention must be paid. That's the big thing. This is a symbolic victory that sort of resets everybody's perspective and makes them understand that there are legitimate concerns here in Rhode Island as well as across the country. These people have been overlooked. The Democrats have sort of dissed the white working class. They're playing identity politics a little too strong. And I think there's going to be a recalibration on all of that.
I noticed a divided nation. We have a divided state. And most of our congregations around the state are divided. I made a couple of observations, one of which is that we don't always understand the meaning of events while we're in the midst of them. And for people who say, ah, this is the end of a certain kind of government structure, or ah, this is the beginning of a permanent majority, they said the same thing 8 years ago when President Obama was elected and had the Senate and the House as well. So a little humility in response to current events is a good thing.
I guess what I'm getting at is, have you noticed any dissension among the community that you're around worse than usual, people having a difficulty dealing with this kind of division, which really has been with us for a long time? It's just kind of like been thrown into great relief now.
I think the surprise result of the election, which didn't go the way the media was leaning, created kind of a deep gasp in communities. And what I've heard from congregations is within days of the election, people were having to excuse themselves from Bible study meetings. people would say something and another person just would break into tears and have to excuse themselves. People have absented themselves from church on Sunday because they weren't sure they wanted to hear what the message might be from the pulpit. I've heard stories of families really worrying about how they're going to talk to each other, especially at Thanksgiving.